And we learn that wisdom is simply the ability to apply the facts, to apply knowledge. So you can have all the knowledge there is, but if you don't know how to apply those facts, that knowledge, it doesn't do you very much good. So to know wisdom, or to be able to see or understand or have wisdom and understanding. The word understanding means discipline or chastisement. Chastisement can take many forms. Discipline can be in many forms. It can be physical punishment. It can be simply instructing. It can be learning something by trial and error. Many ways to be disciplined or instructed. And so we are to have the wisdom and instruction. This second verse further says, to perceive the words of understanding. Perceive means to know or to distinguish. Words mean something said, and understanding means intelligence or knowledge. So this means that we are to be able to recognize words of knowledge when they are spoken. Millions of words are spoken every day that do not add to our knowledge or understanding at all. But upon those rare occasions when words of knowledge and intelligence are spoken, we should be able to recognize or know when this is happening. Then we can profit from them. All words that come from God are in this category. Next, we move on to verse 3 of Proverbs chapter 1. This says, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity. Now, these words need to be identified, defined, so we know what he's saying. The word receive means to take away or to accept. To accept instruction, in other words. Accept chastisement, accept the correction or discipline of the Lord. Accept it. But the kind of discipline you accept is qualified here. This discipline, it comes from wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity. That's where this discipline comes from wisdom, justice, judgment, equity. The word here for wisdom is different from the word in verse 2. It means to be circumspect or to make good choices. We have all learned the bad effects of making bad choices. This is a form of discipline, and we're to learn from those experiences of making bad choices. At least we try not to make the same bad choice again. We learn, for example, that putting the hand into the fire will burn us. This is not a wise thing to do. This is a form of discipline which produces pain. If we're smart, we learn from it. So we receive the wisdom gained from that experience. So the meaning of this phrase, receive the instruction of wisdom, it can be applied to many situations. Next, verse 3 says, to receive the instruction of justice. Justice means to be fair and impartial, to do what is right. But we ask, what is right? We only know what is right if God says it's right. God's Word teaches us what is right and fair. So we receive the instruction of what is right, or the instruction of justice, from God's Word. It molds and shapes us as we are chastened or disciplined by it. Next, verse 3 states that we are to receive the instruction of judgment. Judgment means a verdict, favorable or unfavorable, a formal decree, whether human or divine law. So we are to be disciplined by the decrees or laws of God and laws of man. Of course, God's law always takes precedence over man's law. One of the basic principles of society is that we are subject to laws. Without this, no society can survive. We cannot please God without knowing and conforming to His laws. His laws are a major source of our discipline. John 14:15, if you love me, keep my commandments. John 14:23-24, Jesus answered and said unto him, if a man love me, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him, and we will come unto him and make our abode with him. He that loveth me not keepeth not my sayings. So God's commandments discipline us, so that our lives conform to them. We keep them. And finally, verse 3 says that we're to receive the instruction of equity. The word equity means evenness, straightness, agreement, and it has to do with things that are right. This indicates that we're disciplined by learning to be fair in all our dealings. It requires much self-control and wisdom to be equally fair in all our dealings. It is so easy to be partial and to be selfish. Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others. This also includes how we distribute our time as well as our wealth. There are many demands upon our time. job, family, church, miscellaneous duties? How much time should we devote to studying the Bible, praying, being with the family, sharing time with our children, friends, and strangers? How much money to give to the church, the poor, for luxury, for entertainment, for clothing, transportation, housing, etc.? How much discipline should we give our children? How much is the right amount? All these things come under the heading of equity. To strive for equity is to receive much discipline of our own individual selves. Now, moving into verse 4 of Proverbs 1, there we read, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. Here we have more instruction concerning the purpose of the book of Proverbs. The word subtlety means to have good judgment or to act wise in what we do. The simple are the ignorant and unlearned. So this book is to give good judgment to those that are ignorant and unlearned. Does not this apply to all of us? Cannot we all use a big dose of good judgment? If this book can give me the power to act wise in what I do, then it's invaluable to me. What a treasure. But verse 4 further says, to give to the young man knowledge and discretion. Young man refers to a boy from infancy to adolescence. Knowledge means awareness. This is to be informed of the facts. Discretion means to have wisdom and to be quick in understanding. So this book is to give the young the ability to be aware of the true facts and to be quick at applying and using this knowledge to make good choices and avoid sinning. Jesus said in Matthew 10:16, be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Now, verse 5 of Proverbs 1, a wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. Here we have the benefits or the results of studying Proverbs. Wise means intelligent, skillful, or artful. So it matters not how much knowledge and intellectual ability one has, that person can still greatly benefit from a study of Proverbs. As a matter of fact, to neglect the book of Proverbs is evident that one is not so wise. He says a wise man will hear. To hear is to pay attention and obey what is said. To refuse to hear Proverbs is not wise, but a wise man will hear and increase learning. Learning is to take something mentally or to receive instruction. So the book of Proverbs is not only for the simple, but also for the wise and highly intelligent. It is designed to help all classes of people. Verse 5 further says, a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. Understanding means to have the ability to mentally comprehend something. To attain unto wise counsels means to receive good advice. So it matters not how high the mental abilities are. One still can profit much from the book of Proverbs. No one can claim that I know so much that Proverbs cannot help me, or I know so little that Proverbs cannot help me. The sixth verse says, to understand the proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. NIV translates this sixth verse, for understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. Here we have further statements telling what the purpose of the book of Proverbs is. The reason why one benefits from studying this book, to understand means to distinguish or to know, same as the word perceive in verse 2. A proverb is an axiom. A parable is a short saying with a wise message. And the interpretation, a brief sentence containing some important truth. So this book is to make you to understand the meaning of these brief but powerful messages. The words of the wise. The wise are those who are skillful in knowledge. In their dark sayings is defined as a puzzle or a riddle or a proverb. So here again, to study this book is to learn the meaning of the many sayings in this book. Sayings that actually are the words of the wise. Sayings that seem to be meaningless riddles at first glance, but nevertheless sayings which contain deep meanings concerning how God wants His people to live. Such knowledge and understanding, which we all desire to have, and yet which we find hard to attain to, yet it is within the pages of the book of Proverbs and ours for the taking. And all are given for this purpose. Let's read again the purpose of the book of Proverbs, verses 2 through 6, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, and to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, And a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels, to understand a proverb and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. That's verses 2 through 6, giving there briefly what this whole book of Proverbs is intended to do. Verse 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. This verse gives the theme or the primary subject of this book of Proverbs. The overshadowing subject of this book, particularly the first 9 chapters, is reverence for God. This reverential awe and admiring submissive fear is foundational for all spiritual wisdom and knowledge. While the unbeliever may make statements about life and truth, he does not have true or ultimate knowledge until he is in a redemptive relationship of reverential awe with God. So here's a basic truth. Respect and reverence for the Lord is the beginning of all knowledge. It is actually the principal part of knowledge. Of all the things in this word that are to be known, this is most evident, that God is to be feared, to be reverenced, served, and worshipped. This is so much the beginning of knowledge that they know nothing who do not know this basic truth. In order to attain all the useful knowledge, it is most necessary that we fear God. We are actually not qualified to profit by the instructions that are given to us unless our minds be possessed with a holy reverence for God, causing every thought within us to be brought into obedience to Him. John 7:17, if any man will do his will, he shall know of his doctrine. Job 28:28, and unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. And yet, to prove this truth, that respect for the Lord is needed to be able to have true knowledge, he says, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. There's the ones that don't want the wisdom instruction. They're fools. Fools. Those who are contrary to God and consequently lack judgment or sense. They despise wisdom and instruction. Which class do we want to be in? The ones who want the knowledge or the ones who despise it? These fools have no dread of God's wrath. They do not desire a relationship with their Creator. They will scorn you for telling them what they may do to escape the wrath of God. They hold you in contempt for telling them how to have the favor of God. Their actions cry to the Almighty that He depart from them. They are so far from respecting God that they openly defy Him. So we should not be surprised if they do not desire a knowledge of His ways, but actually despise that instruction. For, he says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. The word instruction is the same word for discipline and chastisement. The person who fails to reverence God will not profit from the chastisement and correction given to him by the Lord. Consequently, there is no chance of improving his attitude or his condition. Therefore, it matters not how much education or natural intelligence a person may have. If they do not reverence God, their wisdom and knowledge is greatly impaired and likely misguided. Consequently, the brilliant scientist may spend his whole career trying to prove that we evolved from nothing. A lifetime of work wasted on a lie, simply because he does not want to believe in or respect God. He's blinded so that he cannot see God in any of his wonderful works of creation. Or it may be a brilliant high school teacher who conveys to his students that premarital sex is okay, just don't get pregnant. Or it may be a very capable advertising executive who spends his talents getting people to drink more alcohol. Or the highly skilled physician who performs abortions, or the greatly talented musician who produces songs which glorify sin and immorality, or maybe a very able author who uses skills to write things which you're ashamed to read. And we can go on and on, showing what a waste great knowledge and intelligence are when God is left out. All knowledge is greatly flawed when respect for God is not included. And yet any knowledge and intelligence is greatly enhanced when coupled with reverence for God. So let us not be deceived by someone's great intelligence and learning which has no respect for God. It is necessarily a flawed and misguided intelligence. Now, beginning with chapter 1, verse 8, and going through chapter 9, verse 18, we have teaching from parents, given in short instructive lessons. This is to prepare the reader for the actual Proverbs, which begin in chapter 10, verse 1. As we continue in this first chapter of Proverbs, verses 8 and 9 say, my son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. for they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck. This is talking about that important home relationship. This is where instruction about God should begin. This is instruction coming from a mother and a father. A mother cannot replace a father. A father cannot replace a mother. And this gives us some insight as to how great a problem single parent homes face. And a high percentage of the homes in this country are single parent homes. The children are to treat their parents as their superiors. My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother. God not only would have his own children to listen to him, not only to pay close attention to what he says, but he would have all children to be respectful of their parents. He wants them to follow the truthful teaching given from parent to child. In Deuteronomy 5, verse 16, honor thy father and thy mother, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee, that thy days may be prolonged, and that it may go well with thee in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Here, this is the basic law of God, here expressed in the Ten Commandments. When God tells the son to hear the instruction of his father, and to forsake not the law of thy mother, he takes it for granted that the parents will, with all the wisdom they possess, instruct their children, and will, with all the authority they have, give them good laws to live by. The children are reasonable beings, and when told what they must do, must also be told why. But the children also have the ability and desire to test the instruction and the instructors. So the parents must stand by the laws given to their children, discipline and chastisement as needed for the child's own benefit. God here charges the children to receive and to remember the good lessons of their parents. Hear the instruction of thy father. Hear it and heed it. Hear it and welcome it. Be thankful for this parental guidance and submit to it. They are to remember this teaching. He says, forsake not the law of thy mother. Do not desire to leave home so you can do as you please. If the law of thy mother was according to the law of God, it must never be forsaken. You never become old enough or mature enough to outgrow the law of God. If you were trained up in the way you should go when you're old, you must not depart from it, Proverbs 22:6. And let us note, this law demands honor of not only the father, but of the mother also. Instructions of the parents, listened to and followed, will be an ornament to adorn the head and a gold chain about the neck. The idea is that these parental instructions are to be highly prized and very valuable. When Joseph and Daniel were highly praised by their kings, a gold chain was placed about the neck. Of all the things that were looked upon as valuable in this life, proper parental instruction is ranked among the highest. This figure is alluded to in Proverbs 6:21-22. My son, keep thy father's commandment, and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart, and tie them about the neck. Next, we move into the 10th verse of Proverbs chapter 1. There it says, my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. The instruction is now given to the child when he is outside the home. The sinner is one who disregards the laws of God and wants to persuade others to sin with him. So the writer of Proverbs uses the sins of murder and robbery to illustrate this. And he gives her a very important general rule for parents to teach their children. If sinners entice thee, consent thou not. That's the rule. Do not consent to the enticement of sinners. Nothing is more destructive to a person's spiritual well-being than to consent to the enticement of sinners. Peter instructed the new converts in Acts 2:40, save yourselves from this corrupt generation, NIV translation. 1 Corinthians 15:33, be not deceived, evil communication corrupt good manners. The very first sin came as a result of violating this teaching. In Genesis 3, verse 6, and when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. Proverbs 13:20, he that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Psalm 1, verse 1, blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. Ephesians 5:11, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. The whole theme of the Bible is consent not to the enticement of sinners. This passage also shows us how eager wicked people are to seduce others into the path of the devil. They will entice. The word entice means to delude, allure, deceive, entice, flatter, or persuade. Sinners love company in their sin. The angels that fell were tempters almost as soon as they were sinners. They do not need to threaten or argue, that they entice with flattery and fair speech. They use this bait to draw others to the hook. But it matters not how many they draw in with them, their punishment will be no less. This only adds to their own sin. So we see here how cautious young people should be to not be seduced by them. Consent thou not, he says. And then, even if they entice you, they cannot face you. James 4:7, resist the devil and he will flee from you. Do not say as they say, nor do as they do, nor do as they would have you do. Have no fellowship with them. That instruction is so simple, so straightforward, so easy to accept. Have no fellowship with them. I mean, that stops it right there. That nips it in the bud before it ever gets started. But once you start having fellowship with them, have company with them, then you're going to be enticed by them. You're spending your time doing the things they want to do, and next thing you know, you're doing it along with them. Have no fellowship with them. That's the key. Well, that concludes our lesson at this time. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.